This is a University of Otago podcast.
Professeur sans frontière. I think that sort of describes what we're all here today talking about and exchanging on, professors or teachers without boundaries, because distance teaching is about that. And we think what we've done actually sort of does cross boundaries and get out there and reach the people who we wish to. What I'm going to present today, I was allowed my own title, so taking physiotherapy to the world. What I'm going to do today is just describe an overview of a paper we put together some years ago, a little bit of nuts and bolts, but mainly about some of the what I think are the interesting parts of it. It's a little bit different, and I think each of us who are going to share today has a different experience and a different background to how these papers came about. I think that's just as important as the nuts and bolts and the learning objectives, etc. Briefly, we'll have a look at some a bit of history, the concept of a partnership, a little bit about our students and our teaching team, design, delivery, quality assurance, bouquets and brickbats or prize giving, and some take-home messages. In the beginning, the School of Physio was established in 1996, for amalgamation of the University, the Polytech, and I was appointed Dean of the School. And just after I was appointed, I was back in Montreal, Canada, and I ran into one of the physiotherapists I worked with, and she said, "Oh, you're off to New Zealand." And I said, "Yeah." She said, "You must be going to work with Robin McKenzie." And I said, "No, I'm going to the University of Otago, very proud of my appointment and everything." "Oh, okay," and off she goes. So it sort of made a very important message there was the brand recognition. The name of McKenzie was very important. We arrived in Dunedin and we thought, hey, we're supposed to have a mission statement by next week or something like that. So we decided, well, we're not going to be a power in research in 5 years, but we had a lot of teaching experience in the school, and we thought we could actually be an international player, we called it, in physiotherapy education. That was part of our mission. A little bit later, one of the staff comes to me and has said, "Look, this guy is saying terrible things about the school, the way we teach." I said, "Have a look at it." "Yeah, he's dead right. I quite agree with him." But this guy called Robin McKenzie actually hit the nail on the head with some of his comments. But in reference to my staff, I made sure I went and met with him, talked to him, and realised we had a bit of an overlap, our interest in postgraduate education, as I'll tell you in a minute. And we dialogued for about 2 years before we got anything going. It took us another couple of years to launch this paper. Okay, so who's our partner? McKenzie Institute International was developed as a charitable, registered charitable trust, developed to deliver postgraduate education based on a method of physiotherapy treatment known as the McKenzie Method. Anyway, it's kind of expanded and it has 26 regional branches. I don't mean Oamaru and towns like that. I mean, you know, Slovenia, the Czech Republic, Japan, etc. So it's pretty international. They have their own educational pathway. They even offer their own diploma. Have the education director, good to know, a research foundation, and are pretty well known in the physiotherapy world. We saw that partnership as kind of a win-win. The McKenzie Institute had international teaching staff, folks who went around the world delivering short courses to qualified physiotherapists. They had a steady stream of students. People wanted this diploma they give out, and a recognised global brand. At the university, Otago Physio, one of the oldest schools really in the world, is well known internationally. Many of our graduates from way back appear in the who's who, the top 10 of musculoskeletal physiotherapy. We had several staff with distance teaching experience, and we do know the library and the ITS infrastructure of the university is not too bad. So by getting together, we thought we both had I'll have to climb on the cupboard next. Just want to run you through this. This is to put the course or the paper we're going to talk about. The Americans get really worried about papers. They really get really confused, so we'll try to use the right words today. The McKenzie Institute offers a pathway to education with some short courses, examination. Then you run off to the clinic and you do some intensive clinical training, have a very formal exam and have a diploma. So we could see, ha-ha, there's something missing in that training program. Some actual sort of theoretical, problem-solving, clinical reasoning type. So we thought, well, we could actually build a university qualification into that. So what we did was use our in-place infrastructure, introduce the paper. Students could, if they wish, and some have done, come on campus, complete a postgrad diploma in physio, go on to a master's. We have one student who's taken that route just recently, and they could still complete their McKenzie qualification. So what we're going to focus on today is this paper here. One used to be a 10-point paper. I have no idea how many points now. 1/4 of a year's work of distance teaching. And you can see by adding that in, it provides a foundation, a theoretical structure for the work students are going to do in clinic, whether it's somewhere around the world or here in Dunedin. So how do we go about this? Back in the around 2000, we could pull out the manuals on distance teaching, have a look at those. But rather, we did a bit of consultation. I talked to a friend in Montreal who was also developing a distance paper. He'd got some venture capital. He was estimating around 50 grand to develop a paper one-off, first time up, which was not quite in our budget here at Otago, I don't think, at that point in time. So we had to think maybe that model's not the best. We looked at some of the other models around the university, which have been very successful. We borrowed some of their ideas. We looked how we can utilise the various IT, which was evolving at the time. Had a bit of a vision how I wanted it to work. Of course, we took into account what we're allowed to do, not allowed to do through the university policies. Looked at the literature, and probably we did a lot of that. Asked for divine intervention at times, because we really didn't know. Anyway, we had this, came up with our plan. Maybe open the cupboard, is it? Thanks, it's all right, I'll come back. It's all right, I'll just work over here. Okay, so first of all, before we start looking at the plan, just introduce our students and our teaching team. Working in a partnership with the McKenzie Institute, we were able to recruit from persons enrolled in their programs, members of their institute, very committed physiotherapists internationally. And that brought a different way of thinking about our teaching. Students from countries where their training cultures were very different, their educational backgrounds were sometimes quite deficient in terms of clinical reasoning, evidence-based practice, etc. Our team, which was a combined team from the McKenzie Institute in Otago, we have about 9 people we coordinate on this. Speak a number of different languages, so we can actually talk to the students in their own language at times, and a mixture of clinicians and academics. I'm the only non-physiotherapist in the whole package. And the team didn't just sort of start. We had to evolve it, and that's been a major part of the exercise of building the team over the 4 or 5 years we've been going at the present time. No one's quit yet, which is fantastic. We've done some little in-house changes. This is not Beaches Open and Beaches Closed by Surf Life Saving. It's an image to give some idea of what we mean by Professeur Sans Frontières. We are a bit international. The yellow flags represent our teaching team. There's 5 of us in New Zealand, Nelson, Wellington and Dunedin. Someone in Sydney, we just put them in the middle of Australia. Sydney's not really there. Apologies. We've got a member in the United States and California, which the flag's about right. We've got folk in the UK and in the Netherlands. So that's our teaching team who run this. Now, our students come from all over. We've had a New Zealander, Japan, Saudi Arabia, Greece, Crete, France, UK, Denmark, Sweden, Netherlands, Argentina, and lots from the United States and a few from Canada. So we like to think we're pretty international, both in our team and our student population, but that creates all sorts of challenges. Okay, so how do we put all this together? Some of the design features I just want to identify and talk about briefly. We wanted to create an international learning community. These are students who've taken a number of papers with the McKenzie Institute at different countries around the world. We wanted them to stay attached but incorporate them into the university. It wasn't a knowledge distribution system. We wanted to have a real learning environment. And This morning, I thought I'd better check to see if these guys are really interacting. So I went on to Blackboard, which is our platform. Would anyone believe 30,000 accesses since the start of term? That's what it said. And that's a lot. That's spread across discussion groups and other announcements are only a small part of that. So these guys really, we've got them working, interacting quite a lot. There's a lot of discussion, self-education, so to speak. We have to respect the cultures. Some of them have come from countries where they haven't had this sort of exchange. A lady from Czechoslovakia, or the Czech Republic, I should say, was saying it's the ability to talk with people around the world through Blackboard, the openness to talk about her profession is amazing. She hasn't always had that. We've tried to maximise the way we teach by incorporating the teaching team. We've sort of tried to structure our work into modules so we can define quantums of work for the students, assign staff to it, let them be high energy for 2 weeks or a week or 3 weeks, rather than have us all tired at the end of the whole show. And we've tried to match learning and assessment. And I hope there's no members of the Senate Subcommittee on Assessment in the audience, because if they are, I'll just warn you, you may be shocked at what's coming up. And, of course, we want some independent, lifelong learners. These are folks who, I'm actually teaching someone older than myself this year. It's quite amazing when he told me. So he's still involved in education at his age, my age. Okay, delivery. We started off with the traditional audio conference and send out readings, and you know, which was standard around about 2000, 2003. Just imagine organising the audio conference with those time zones, folks. It was a huge effort to get this off the ground. They were okay, but really, and students working in their second language sometimes don't say too much, and we found it wasn't a raging success. So we've gradually moved away from the audio conference model down into more of a total Blackboard email approach. And we sort of did that as the student IT savvy increased. A huge change over the last 3 or 4 years with students' familiarity with IT. So we can do these things with confidence. We thought the audio conferences at the start would sort of catch up any problems, which they did, but now the students don't even want them. So we've moved on. And as I said, we're trying to create this idea of students helping students, a focus on dialogue. So the tasks we build into our teaching aren't a one-way task. This is the horror show. Just very briefly, we actually teach longer than we're supposed to. We teach for 16 weeks. We have to cover all this material we want. We break things up into modules. Each module has a name, a predefined. We have staff members assigned to them. I didn't put all the detail in. And down here was where I was really worried about presenting. We tend to assess everything we do. But the modules are self-contained. The students like to work to a goal, finish on Thursday evening, start again Sunday. So the assessment, we've also built it without going into all the details, so the tasks are totally different. Right from over here, we are very small essays, see how their English skills are, can they write a citation, going into group work, which has just finished last week, where they're working on some very complex pathophysiology in small groups, more formal group assignment, basic critical analysis, quizzes, group presentations, and actual assessment of a video using a particular strategy. So a whole range of different tasks, all of which have a theoretical foundation, then moving on to the practical. And what we've done, we've sort of looked at our teaching team and said, some of these folks in Holland probably don't know the University of Otago as well as we do, so we teamed them up with one of our staff members who can provide the in-house support. So we selectively put our teaching team together so everyone feels very comfortable and supported, particularly with the technologies. And we're talking very low tech. I think we're saving the good wine till later, aren't we? That was just a clearer view of what we're doing. Everything's structured and the learning is quite directed so that we can finish a module, look at it and move on over the 16 weeks. Of importance, I suppose, to this group is this really a university course or a university paper? That's probably the biggest question, which I asked myself at the start. We had people who had not taught in the university, people who were new to distance teaching, people who were new to post-grad teaching. So we spend a lot of time on this stage here with the planning, the coordination, seeking feedback. All the students have passed the university English entry requirements. They're real Otago students. We've had students do, I think, two or three courses at the Language Centre, bringing their English skills up before they can enrol. Some of them have made huge commitments on the language front. Now, we spend a lot of time on this point here. We're quite lucky because many of the staff all attend the same conferences. While not everyone's at the same conference, there's opportunities for live face-to-face. And the last one of those was back in February, where we had a lovely meeting and were able to invite HEDC to come in and tell us what we can do better, what we could improve on, and pat us on the back for things we seem to be doing okay. That was wonderful. So we do have that type of informal. We go through the formal assessment through HEDC. We moderate our paper, our marking, so that we're looking at highs and lows and getting some continuity across. We have the formal HED assessment where we can find out if we've sort of turned our papers back on time and all that. And a lot of informal feedback coming from the students. We meet up with them later at conferences. They can tell us what's working, what's not working. A guy from Crete really didn't like having to give up family dinners 10 o'clock on a Sunday night to go to an audio conference, which was 7 o'clock here and 5 o'clock in Sydney. So we sort of thought, well, give him a break. We'll cancel the audio conferences. So we do get a lot of feedback, which will let us build. And I have to say, each year we've gone one step further. A little bit of a prize giving here. I do this with possibly a bit of tongue-in-cheek. Fantastic. Remote library services, just absolutely fantastic, the service they give the students. And it's getting, as we get more e-journals and resources, probably the workload's going down as they become more self-sufficient. But for someone in Greenland, and I didn't mention we had one student from Greenland on that map, it's kind of hard thinking, how do I, jolly well do I get this material? But it's just as fast as me going across to the medical library and copying it myself. So it's really fantastic services, we all know. ITS have provided us with a really nice platform. There's things we can do better. But basically, we couldn't do it without that type of support. On the brickbats, and these are a little bit cautious, the course approval process deserves the first brickbat from me. We have students who will just do one paper. So we have to get the very official form. We have to fill it out, put it in the post, send it to Greenland. The student has to make sure he hasn't taken his holiday at the wrong time when the form arrives, sign it, put it back in there, send it back to Otago, and then we can perhaps get an IT access for him. We tell our students, you're going to work so hard for 16 weeks, have your holidays before. And they're probably on holiday when the form arrives. So the getting the course started on time can be quite difficult. Surely we could just get a dean to sign that bit of paper and say, you're in. We did have a little bit of a upset. We tried to get some cult support earlier on in the process, but distance teaching, the way we were doing it, was seen as an in-house cost, and sorry, you're not eligible. And software availability is something I really would like to put a pitch out. These are Otago students. Why can't they get EndNote? Not just the kids on campus. So I spend my academic time trying to help them through various freebies on the net so they can save their references. They're Otago students who paid international fees. So just a couple of comments on there. Some take home. Our new dean took a group of our senior staff to a North American conference a year ago to promote our research. And one of the messages they came home with, so many people came by the store, the booth, and said, hey, it's fantastic what you're doing with your partnership with McKinsey. We've got recognition around the world for this effort. Staff who examine students clinically find the information, their level of learning, understanding, evidence-based, clinical reasoning, etc., is far superior than it was, say, 4 or 5 years ago before we took this route. So that's sort of informal feedback, hard to quantify, but we think pretty critical. The value of a partnership, I think, is a message I think is so critical. We couldn't do it without a partnership like this. We can share resources. We can infuse the level of education into the McKinsey program. We can learn from them. They do our marketing. We have a recruiting pipeline. We normally have 16 students. We had to take 18 this year because of pressures. But they recruit those from all around the world. It will be hard for us to advertise in these countries. So, I mean, with that partnership comes the steady pipeline of students. We've built our distance teaching capacity incredibly, gone into new areas we hadn't thought about 5 years ago as a school. And it's a model for other papers. We've taken this model and it worked with a New Zealand group, an acupuncture group within physiotherapy. Taking the same model, working in partnership, team teaching with frontline clinical professionals, as well as ourselves, and once again have a steady stream of our target number of students without very much marketing. So the partnership concept is something I think has been absolutely critical to our success. And the last point there, it's been lots of fun. Even with the need for divine intervention earlier on, it has been a real fun experience for me and for the teaching team. And despite the few hiccups we've had, we still have the same teaching team as 5 years ago. And no one's really been forced to do this. So I think that's a good indication. And we meet so many of the students. And you have to acknowledge the growth and the gratitude they respect. You can't quantify it and put it on a form, but you know it's there because they've advanced their education through working with us at Otago. Physio started off, and I have to do a little plug. You were a bit of a fishbowl back in 96, new to the university. Everyone wanted to make sure we do it right. So we were sort of felt like that physio fish. But we've used this distance teaching paper, as you can probably guess, to put our stamp on the world. Thank you. And I'd just like to acknowledge the various people who've contributed to us and thank them because they've been the people who've supported me throughout this. Thank you.